Good morning. Today is Monday, December the 18th. Joining us this morning is the bank dude, dressed in his merry, merry finest, John Dalby. Good morning,
Always
sir.
Always a pleasure to be here with you, Brian, and Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Do you do the Santa Claus ties?
I have Friday? Yeah, I have one Christmas tie, and it is just kind of like a candy stripe thingy. Yeah.
Doesn't light up or sing.
No, I don't have. And I don't have, you know, but we are having, I believe, Friday at the bank, our ugly sweater contest. So, or at least a casual day. So, if you want to see some ugly sweaters, come on down.
Day.
Yeah, exactly.
Not to be confused with ugly furry short day.
Yeah.
You know, some of those ugly sweaters aren't all that shabby. we were at the A's a couple years ago and bought one for Mom, and I guess it would qualify in the spirit of the event, but it was kind of like, yeah. I looked at the Warriors one going, well, oh, they don't make it my size. Okay, fine. So you'll be there in all your best ugly?
I actually don't, well, some might. I don't.
Easy.
I don't own an intentionally ugly Christmas sweater.
Oh, we'll ask Sue which one
yeah.
you should wear. I bet you'll get it. You found a quote there?
I'm working on it. Let's see. Well, since it's the season, this one right here.
From Acts?
Yeah, there you go.
Okay, from Acts 20. It's more blessed to give than to receive.
Yeah.
Cool.
Tis the season.
You know what's really bizarre for me, though, with that whole quote? Circa 75. Year 75. It's okay. I still have a tough time. I mean, since it is the season, we at least start off in this direction. Thinking of who was all alive in that time frame. You know, I think of Cicero and Aristotle and Plato, and it was like about 100 years before Christ. You go, really? Huh. And then after, you know, some of the guys, I think geographically challenged as many of us are, you know, coast to coast in the Midwest, this should be about a 45-minute flyover.
Right.
Yeah. And you see Chicago as you're going past kind of thing. I think the same thing with historical timelines as well. You know, we talk about how long Eureka's been around, or we talk about California. Okay, 150 years. Well, start counting generations, and now somebody's great-grandpa might have been one of the founders of the town you're in.
That's correct.
Which is just a little disconcerting, I think. Oh, boy. What are you hearing about the Christmas season? The national stuff seems to be like it's percolating in a positive trend.
The few retailers that I've talked to have seen it's a good year. It's not a great year. I think you've got two things happening. One is the there's some challenges in the marijuana industry, so there's less money flowing in that industry. But there's also increased consumer confidence, which is always a positive.
Isn't that the primary driver?
Well, of course, the economics, you have to have the money available to spend in order to spend it.
So you're positive if you have the money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And consumer confidence. You have to believe the future's there. If I'm going to, if I've got X number of dollars, I'm more willing to spend more of them on the celebration of Christmas or some other event if I believe the future is bright. Meaning I'm not concerned that I'm going to need that for a rainy day. So you have those two factors, and I think you know they kind of offset each other to some degree, and so it appears that it's not a great, but it's a good Christmas so far. But again, I've got a very small sampling.
Well, get out and expand it then. Gee.
Well, why don't you tell me you're going to ask the question before I come in?
The spending part. I can think of four or five people you could. Yeah. So you've got that. Now, we also heard the prime ticked up.
It did.
Okay. Is that also a reflection of positive?
So, well, yeah, that's a really interesting statement. So what we have going into the Obama era, throughout the Obama era, you had unprecedented rates or moves by the Federal Reserve. First of all, 1% was supposed to be the absolute floor in with rates, and we went down to 0 to 25 basis points. So we went through the floor, and then we started. That wasn't enough to stimulate the economy, so we started doing what we call quantitative easing, which is a really fancy word for printing of money. So we substantially increased the money supply. And now we're in this administration, and I'm not going to tell you it's his policies or whatever, but the fact is we're now seeing the Federal Reserve trying to reverse those things. So for the previous 8 years, they were trying to pump up the economy, and now they're trying to not really slow it down, but trying to get at least their foot off the accelerator so if they can push it back down at some point in time.
Kind of climb out of the swamp a little bit?
Exactly.
Now, with the additional money supply that was out there, are those starting to be brought in?
Very slowly. Yeah, so what the Fed did is they purchased assets, Jenny Mae certificates and treasuries and other assets like that, and put it on their balance sheet. So as they sell those assets off, and of course to do that, all they did is print money because it didn't really exist. So now they're slowly selling those. They were in the posture in which all the principal came back was reinvested, but they weren't putting any more back in. They were staying at neutral. Now they're slowly trying to redact some of that money from the economy.
So are they trying to absorb back in some of that?
So we should see the money supply begin to shrink.
So will we hear that three disappears and then two disappears?
Or we just QE1, 2, and 3?
Yeah. Or we're just going to disappear.
We're talking years and years, maybe decades, to undo this.
So we'll disappear first. It's 8:19.
Listen to 980 AM for the best music. ABBA, Neil Diamond, Barbra Streisand, Billy Joel, and The Fifth Dimension. The all-time best are heard every day, all day long, on 980 AM. We are easy radio. Easy on your ears and easy on your mind. This is memory-making music, and you'll love the memories you create. Tune in and hear the best music. Easy radio, 980 AM.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with the bank dude, Mr. Dalby. So, John, with the activity that's going on, you would have thought that if the stock market, which I guess is primarily driven by a lot of retirement funds, union funds, individual retirement funds, things of that nature, going up as much as it has this year, that people would be doing cartwheels down the street, that America's back. Obviously, that's being tempered by some of the other stuff that's going on. It's certainly easy to be distracted from the economics of today because it is relatively stronger than what it's been the last little bit. When you look at stuff and the regulators look at you, is it a different playing field today than it was December of 2016?
Well, of course, the banking industry is changing and evolving very, very rapidly. So we have seen community banks disappear across the country, and they are not being reestablished. And the reason being is that the regulatory burden that's placed on a new bank, like if I was trying to start Redwood Capital Bank in this year, it would not be economically feasible. There is no way we could possibly start a bank today and provide a return to our shareholders within 5 or 10 years.
Because of the regulatory burden?
Correct. The amount of capital that you're required and et cetera, et cetera. So I'm only aware of one bank actually opening in California since 2007. And that particular bank had a model that was privately owned. The family understands that's starting the bank that they're not going to see any return on this thing for 5 or 10 years.
It's a totally different model.
Right. And they're good with that. This is what they want to do, which is great, and that's fine. But as far as a traditional community bank owned by shareholders that are expecting a return, you know, that's just not going to happen. And so every time you see a merger or an acquisition of a community bank, there's another one gone. So we're seeing the numbers diminish. You're seeing super regional and major banks grow. You know, that's the direction that, that we're going in the U.S.
So with a regional consolidation, does that mean that the regulators are more apt or less apt to get engaged in the day-to-day of all banks because of the concern of either an oligopoly? Or some other artificial things that would be put in place because size and magnitude?
Now, those issues are political in nature. Those are not the regulatory. So the regulators just follow their orders.
But too big to fail certainly drove things for a while.
Too big to fail
industry.
Created bigger bigger banks, not smaller ones. So, you know, it is what it is. Now, what does that mean for us? You know, it would be a natural follow-up question is we see that we can remain independent for, you know, a long, long period of time, and that's our goal.
So as you look at the cost, some argue, can be passed on. Well, I suppose if you're an elastic pricing model, that could work. Most of us can't. There's more choices today than there were yesterday and less than tomorrow. So the pass-through, while given lip service, unless you're a utility company, a water district, folks along those lines where there really is no feasible, viable option, is absorbed by the consumer.
You have to look at the demographics of who you're marketing to, right?
Yeah.
And so whether we like it or not, technology is changing the way virtually every business is done. You know, we talk a lot about retail in here. You know, the younger you have going backwards, you have the Zs, the Ys, the millennials, the Xs, and the baby boomers. And each one of those has a tendency towards a certain type of marketing. With the baby boomers still, I just saw a statistic, 63% of them prefer to purchase their items in a brick-and-mortar location, in a physical location.
It's a tactile experience.
Exactly. While as you get further and further up the chain to Z, you know, X and Z, it gets more and more mobile, even not even internet, but even mobile-driven purchases. So that's the direction that retail's going. You're seeing changes in the communications industry. We're going to see changes in the banking industry with technology. And the question is, you know, how do you fit into that, and how do you change your model to take advantage of it?
Well, and what is it? Because of the fluid nature of it.
That is correct.
What is the it? You know, today ain't tomorrow, so to speak. I mean,
it changes so rapidly now. The speed of technological change is accelerating each day. It's going to take some forethought, and we have to look forward, and we have to be prepared, and we have to take advantage.
I would think flexibility is one of the biggest things, knowledge and flexibility of whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So how do you press that down into your business community, your business partners, to say, you know, yeah, it's comfortable to do it this way today, but don't expect to be able to do that tomorrow.
Well, look at your demographics again. Who is it you're marketing? Who's buying your products? And, you know, market and prepare your products for that. For instance, millennials, according to the last study that I just reviewed, they tend to be app-driven. And not even so much Facebook, where the
I'm more app-driven.
Generation X is Facebook driven.
That would be Honeycrisp.
Yeah.
It's 8:30.
What could we do as a community to make Humboldt a better place to work and live? The answer is to make sure our kids are literate, able to plan financially, move forward in their education so they are better prepared to enter our workforce, and become contributing and productive members in our society, community, and economy. How do we do it? Through the Decade of Difference Initiative. Visit decadeofdifference.org and find out how you, as a parent, student, or business owner, can help. It's the Decade of Difference. Be part of it.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back to Talk Shop this morning with the bank dude, John Dalby, from Redwood Capital Bank. Talk Shop presented by CDH Painting by Redick and by Lolita Cheese Factory. John, looking at some of the different challenges that are out there, we're seeing some real positive economic numbers. Is that translating into what you sense California is doing?
Ooh.
Because we're a baby California here.
Yeah, I got to tell you, I'm not an expert on the California economy. I track the national economy to some degree, but mostly the local economy. So it'd be really hard for me to answer.
So if that's your
question.
Achilles heel, we'll move on to another body part, shall
exactly.
we?
Exactly. Let's do that.
What do you sense here locally? Yeah, I know the unemployment numbers are reported at where they are, but I'm seeing a lot of underemployment. Okay, well, that's something that it's tough to accurately reflect that.
Okay.
And a lot of businesses that are looking at doing something different because, like we said before the break, today isn't the same as yesterday. You got to anticipate tomorrow. So I kind of get a sense that there's a gurgling, bubbling something going on, but how that's going to manifest itself, I don't know.
Well, we're an economy, our local economy is certainly in transition. So when you look at over 50% of the jobs are government, I mean, that's a telling tale right there.
Which should indicate a stable economy, right?
And we are. We're relatively stable if you look at us compared to even Redding, you know, the Central Valley, Sacramento. We didn't see the big drops like they did during the recession, but we haven't seen the big gains coming out of it.
I would suggest that their reference point is higher than ours because they do get the booms and then it gets ratcheted up. And then when it comes down, it's a little down, but it never comes down to where we are. Yeah.
So, but they also have, you know, compare the Redding economy, they have some advantages that we don't. One is they have buildable land so they can create housing, you know, pretty much as fast as they want to or need to. We have a huge housing crisis here.
At least it's being talked about, though, now.
Yeah, it's being talked about, but you have to look at physically what can you do. I think the city of Eureka is doing some wonderful, you know, has some great ideas with zoning to change it so that we can at least start building in internally, increasing the density of some of the housing in Eureka.
Well, Arcata's got, Karen Diemer was in Friday. Strombeck's got something. Cooking, they've got that 800 unit facility. You know, it's not a dorm. I have a tough time saying it's a dorm because it's off campus. But let's call it a dorm that's being proposed. And then Kramer's got his. I think she said 140 units. So there's about 1,000 living units that's going to give some relief somewhere to somebody.
Yeah. HSU has a bigger housing crisis than our business sector, but you know, the problem. Problem is the housing costs in comparison to the average wage, and you have to look at us historically.
That's the issue.
Yeah. So you have historically you have to look at Eureka. We were founded and were for the majority of our life, the span of the Eureka, a resource based economy. You know, with lumber, fishing, gravel, and these are things that have been ratcheted back and now are a very small part of our economy. So we're in transition. That void's been filled with cannabis, and what's going to happen with cannabis is going to be very interesting, and you know, I don't have any predictions. Every time I look at it, I come to a different conclusion. But I think the legalization that's by the state of California is taking place on January 1st for recreational use. I don't think that's going to be a really big economic event for us. you know, there's going to be some positives and negatives that come with it. You know, if we're talking strictly economically, you know, the problem with tourism is that those are not high paid jobs, you know, hospitality and tourism.
That's the underemployment.
Right. And so you're correct. Yeah. We have a lot of people that are underemployed because, you know, if you're not working for the government, there's not a lot of really high paying jobs, especially for those that don't have significant expertise in certain fields, you know, if you're not a professional.
The entry level guys.
At the same time, there's, which is, you know, seems absolutely an opposite of what we just talked about, is there's a big shortage of employable workers, especially in certain fields. So the biggest problem I hear from business people is finding people that are, one, willing and qualified to work.
For the compensation that's affordable for that position.
And you can't bring somebody in because they look at the housing prices and they go, what?
Now, is that true for the six-figure jobs also? Or is this more the entry-level, secondary-level positions?
Yes.
So across the board?
Yeah. Now, if you look at housing prices in comparison to Southern California, ours are relatively low. But if you look at them, you know, in the Midwest, Idaho, yeah. Montana, other places, there's far more far better housing at much less cost.
KINET, yeah, but they don't have the Pacific.
There you go. This
but
is a
I don't
beautiful
know if that,
place.
If that matters or not in this scenario, but it's kind of what the default has always
been.
It's
a beautiful
to.
Place, but you and I ruin that.
That's true.
Yeah.
The walking landscape can get pretty rough pretty quick.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's 8:42.
What's the shopping show all about?
If you haven't listened to the show before, it's kind of tough to describe.
I guess the easiest first step is to simply go to the Shopping Show website.
Theshoppingshow.net.
And join us this Saturday for the next Shopping Show.
On KINS 106.3 FM.
KURY FM 95.3 and 101.3 in the Illinois Valley.
And KEKA 101.5 and 100.9 in Eureka.
Good morning, KINS. News and information time. It's 8:46. We're back out in public.
we can
to stay on radio. And
I know they always
on.
Tell me that I have the face for radio and to stay there.
Yeah, I just kind of that's an expected thing for me.
Yeah.
What do you see in the future for the area as far as retail and employment? Do we need more mills? I mean, certainly there's demand with the fires that are going on down south and really far down south, if we can get to the lumber or to the timber.
Well, that's okay. Do we need more mills? No, because we're having to import logs
to maintain.
Yeah, and this is the piece that always scratches my head is we have the highest forestry standards in the world, and we have lots of timber. This should be the first place on the planet that we want to cut timber because we're going to take care of the environment when we do so. You know, I understand there were things in the past that were done, but today we have, you know, incredible forestry standards, yet we're importing logs into California from places that don't.
Or you know, so. Finished product.
Yeah. So do we need mills? Not until we have, you know, the resources, meaning, you know, until we start harvesting some more of the timber that we currently have. But that certainly would be a boon to our economy in that it creates living wage jobs. So generally, you know, if you're working in a sawmill or working in the woods, you're making a living wage.
And the ripples, the support. I mean, that was one thing we were reminiscing, Dad and I, a couple of weeks ago. He said, okay, you got that, but then you got the diesel mechanics that work on the tractors that are helping to get the stuff out of the woods. And then you got the tire guys and the whole secondary and tertiary economy associated with that that also disappeared.
Well, that's true, and yeah, absolutely. There's a lot of businesses that, you know, were supporting the timber industry, and they're gone.
And they were all local, primarily.
Exactly.
So
not all, but yeah.
But the employment was here, the residuals were here, the support was here, and you were able then to have a viable downtown instead of how it's evolved.
So, yeah, and so is that ever going to come back? I think politically, it's going to be very, very difficult to ever see us cutting timber at, you know, at significantly advanced rates from what we are currently cutting it. Now, there's certainly demand for it. I mean,
well, even salvage harvest.
Well,
if something that's simple, I mean, you're not even having to cut the trees. You know,
yeah,
you're just
and I'm not
out.
A forester, so I'm not going to chime in on that. But it seems, from the outside, it seems kind of crazy we shouldn't. But, you know, there might be reasons. But we've got to rebuild Santa Rosa. We've got to rebuild now Los Angeles, you know, Southern California. We're going to need lumber. It'd be great if we were providing that lumber and that timber. But, you know, again, those are political decisions. They're not economic. But they have an economic impact.
Don't slip.
I'm just trying to be a realist on
this
thing.
Yeah, I know. That advocacy thing, it's a dangerous two-edged sword. Thanks for coming by. You hosting?
We are hosting.
All right. Well, we know where the big sleigh will be then.
There you go. Merry Christmas.
And to you, sir. Thanks. See everybody tomorrow.